Well, Teresa on the radio, we've got a major problem here, folks, and I apologize for that. But apparently we've got some audio trouble that's happening on our show. This is the second day in a row, and of course I'm going to have to contact the folks at blogradio.com.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what the hell is going on?
I don't even see you on my screen, JC.
Are you serious? I see you.
I don't even see you on my screen. I've literally had to reboot. And this is the second day in a row that this has happened to us.
No, I think probably what you should do is you need to clear your cache. Because for some reason you're bringing up old screens. Because every time you use your computer, it saves your screens that you usually go back to. So it can pop up easy when you go to access it again.
Oh.
And keeping that information. So you probably should go back and clear your cache.
All right. Well, that's what it is that I'll do. I'll clear the cache. So with that being said, see, Sal just told me I don't have audio for your show. But anyway, we'll start over. Here we go.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. The death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
This is a joke, folks. There we go.
Thank God it's show.
Well, apparently it's working now. How am I now, JC? Can you hear me? JC?
Loud and clear.
All right, loud and clear. Thank you. Anyway, all right, folks, we're back 4 minutes after the hour. We've never been this late on the show unless, of course, I've fallen asleep on it. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on December the 7th, 2012, a day that will live in infamy. And if one son of a bitch tells me he doesn't know what today is, I will slap them like a four-year-old broad. That's right. I'll slap you like a little girl who did something wrong. If you don't know what today is, you should know what today is. It's the bombing of Pearl frickin' Harbor, goddammit. Everybody remembers this day. It's December 7th, dammit.
No, not everybody remembers this
day. Did you remember it, sweetheart?
No, I did not.
You did not?
No.
All right, folks, witness this live on the air. Come on
no,
over here.
No,
I don't.
No.
You don't know. You will get slapped right now. You don't remember this day. How do you not know today? You're married to a historian,
exactly,
and you don't know what today
is. That's what I have you for.
How do you not remember this? Come over here and get
slapped. I don't need to remember it.
Can I slap your ass?
No, you cannot. Ow, you jackass.
Anyway, so the point is you won't get slapped. Bottom line is, how do you not remember this? Anyway, we got plenty of stuff to talk about today. A lot of stuff going on in the news.
I'm thinking about the nurse.
Yeah. Mary is thinking about the nurse. And we have to talk about this, folks. I'm hoping that White Mike calls up today maybe even Poverty Supreme calls up today. I call him Poverty Prince because I think that should be his name. Not Poverty Supreme. It's Poverty Prince. It's the Prince of Poverty. But we've got to play this audio again. We've played it before because something tragic has happened as a result of what would be considered a gag, folks. Something that was considered a gag for years. Now, when I looked up this story, I was under the impression somebody else took their life. But as it turns out, it was something completely different. Yeah. Thank you, Sal. Historian, haha, love it. Most people have no idea that over 300 Japanese fighter planes attacked us on that early December 7th morning in Hawaii, which forced the United States into World War II. Now, look, I was under the impression that the woman that you hear in a majority of this audio, the nurse, that is the woman who killed herself. It turns out it's only the woman who picked up the phone, folks. The woman who picked up the phone and transferred the phone to the nurse you hear in the majority of this conversation. The woman who picked up, answered the service, "Hello, this is Prince George's the Seventh Hospital. How may I help you?" "Hello, may I speak to my daughter, or my granddaughter?" Transfers the phone. That broad killed herself. Here's the... who's obviously a black chick. Yes, she is.
We've been handed a phone number, and we have been told that this phone number is the hospital where Kate Middleton is currently staying. Now, we thought we'd give it a call. We don't want to cause any trouble.
Yeah.
We don't want to stress her out, but she's doing it tough.
Yep.
But I reckon we can maybe get her on the radio tonight.
Look, I don't know. I mean, everybody would be trying
This is why I thought of a plan. We can't just ring up and go, "Hi, it's MC and Mel from the Summer 30. Can we chat to Kate?" Hang up. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
You are going to be the Queen.
This is awesome.
I'm going to be Prince Charles.
Hello, I'm the Queen.
Ben and Em, you're involved in this as well. We thought that maybe you could be the Royal Corgis, if you're okay with that. Yeah, exactly.
Sure, we'll pop on in
we'll
a minute.
Come into the studio. I'm going to dial this number.
This is fun. I mean, this is fun.
Yes, yeah. So you're going to be the Queen.
Hello, I'm the Queen.
Hello, Prince Charles of the Hill,
mummy. Oh, Prince Charles. Mm-hmm. I like your ears.
And Ben and Em are going to be the Royal Corgis. So let's give this hospital a call.
Okay.
And see if we can get Kate Middleton or maybe even Prince Wills on the phone tonight. So the number's going in. Oh, jeez, I hope this happens.
Hello, good morning. King Edward III Hospital.
Oh, hello there. Could I please speak to Kate, please, my granddaughter?
Oh, yes. Just hold on.
Thank you.
That chick killed herself. That's it. She says, "Sure, hold on one moment." Bitch is dead.
I understand why, though.
What? JC, please explain this to me.
Because I'm going to tell you what happened. What happened was, because she didn't screen the call to make sure that that was indeed someone from the royal family calling and put her through to the floor where Kate was resting and being attended to, she got all the blame.
She should have screened
that call. What's that?
She just patched the call through. Dude, she wasn't even a real receptionist. She just patched the call through.
Yeah, but on the
department.
Same token, she didn't ask her any questions.
But wait a minute.
Kate
why
too.
Didn't the woman... Hold on. If this was so traumatic, why didn't the woman who ended up calling, right? I mean, they ended up talking to this DJ, the one who gave all the information about her being dehydrated and all that stuff, why didn't she kill herself? She would have gotten more hassle than anybody.
Right.
No, see, this is where I think this is bogus. Because the person who's subject to ridicule is the woman who's on the phone with the two DJs giving up all this information, laughing and giggling with the DJs about Kate's health. Oh, yes, she's fine. You know, she's a little dehydrated. That's the woman who gets the most scrutiny because she is revealing
the
most.
The one who gives the information. One would assume that.
One would assume, JC, you're going to tell me I'm out of my mind here?
Of course.
One would assume. Anyone would assume.
Listen, when she got a call, if she thought immediately that that was for actually Kate, the Duchess of, what is she?
She thought that this was the
queen. Or William's wife. I'm going to say William's wife because I don't know. I think what her title is.
But if she
assumed that that was them, she should have immediately notified a supervisor. I would have. You notify a supervisor because I know I couldn't verify it. I wouldn't put her through to the floor. I'm sure they had a protocol for getting calls to her or to that floor. And I don't think she followed it. I can almost assure you that.
I'm telling you, what we're going to find out, okay, is that whoever this woman is, right, this woman had some personal issues. I don't think that this woman was so... She wasn't the subject of the ridicule at any time.
She wasn't the subject, but she failed to do her job, which made everything else possible. And they blamed her for it. I'm telling you they blamed her for it.
Yeah, but see, it seemed more feasible to me that the woman in the phone call who gives up all the information on the phone, who's laughing and giggling with the DJs, thinking that she's talking to the queen, I thought that was the girl who killed herself.
That's not what I thought as well.
What's that?
I said that's what I thought as well. But when you think about it, everybody thought that. By the time she got the call, she assumed that proper protocol had been followed and that that was indeed the queen, or she wouldn't have given out that information.
Did you hear the woman on the phone?
Yeah.
She's so cavalier. She's like, hold on 1 second. She just says, hold on 1 second. She transfers the phone call. She was never the part of any ridicule. When everyone talked about this story, they talked about the woman who gives up most of the information. In fact, listen to the rest of it.
We've been handed a phone number.
Hold on, we have been told this
phone number is the hospital where Kate Middleton is currently staying. Now, we thought we'd give it a call. We don't want to cause any trouble.
Yeah.
We don't want to stress her out because she's doing it tough.
Yeah.
But I reckon we can maybe get her on the radio tonight.
Look, I don't know. I mean, everybody would be trying
This is why I thought of a plan. We can't just ring up and go, hi, it's MC and Mel from the Summer 30. Can we chat to Kate? Hang up. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
You are going to be the queen.
This is awesome.
I'm going to be Prince Charles.
Hello, I'm the queen.
Ben and Em, you're involved in this as well. We thought that maybe you could be the royal corgis, if you're okay with that. Yeah, exactly.
Sure, we'll pop on in
we'll
a bit.
Come into the studio. I'm going to dial this number.
This is fun. Oh, I mean, this is fun.
Yes, yeah. So you're going to be the queen.
Hello, I'm the queen.
Hello, Prince Charles over here,
mummy. Prince Charles. Mm-hmm. I like your ears.
And Ben and Em are going to be the royal corgi. So let's give this hospital a call.
Okay.
And see if we can get Kate Middleton or maybe even Prince Wills on the phone tonight. So the number's going in. Oh, jeez, I hope this happens.
Hello, good morning. King Edward is on us, please.
Oh, hello there. Could I please speak to Kate, please, my granddaughter?
Oh, yes. Just hold on.
Thank you.
Are they putting us through?
Yes.
If this has worked, it's the easiest prank call we've ever made. Your accent sucked, by the way. I just want you to know.
I'm not used to playing old 80-year-olds.
What about
this then? Kate, my darling, are you there?
Good morning, Mum. This is the nurse speaking. How may I help you?
Hello, I'm just after my granddaughter, Kate. I want to see how her little tummy bug is going.
Mummy?
She's sleeping at the moment, and she has had an uneventful night. And sleep is good for her as we speak. She's been getting some fluids to rehydrate her because she was quite dehydrated when she came in. But she's stable at the moment.
Okay, I'll just feed my little corgis then. When is a good time to come and visit her? Because I'm the queen, so I need a lift down there. Prince! Yeah, Charles!
Mummy, is everything okay?
Oh, wait, my Charles, when can you take me to the hospital, Charles?
When will it be all right to come down and see her? Maybe in the morning or something, if that's okay.
I would suggest that any time after 9 o'clock would be suitable because the doctor will be in the morning.
Okay.
And we'll just be getting her freshened up in the morning. I would think any time after 9.
Wonderful. And is Wills still there? Has he gone home? I haven't spoken to him yet.
He went home at about 9:30 last night. No, actually probably about 9 o'clock last night.
Okay. Lovely. But they're all okay. Everything's all right.
Yes, she's quite stable at the moment. She hasn't had any retching with me since I've been on duty. And she has been sleeping on and off.
Wonderful.
I think it's difficult sleeping in a strange bed as well.
Yes, of course. It's hardly the palace,
oh,
is it?
Oh, nothing like the palace, is it, Charles?
Yes.
And when are you going to walk those bloody corgis?
Mumsy, I'll go and take the dogs outside.
I need to go visit Kate in the morning. My dear, thank you.
That woman gives up everything. She gives the whole kit and caboodle. She just gives it up. That woman didn't commit suicide.
That's because that woman ain't crazy.
I'll tell you what it is that happened, folks. I'll tell you exactly what it is that happened. And I know this, folks. I know this. I know this. I know this. I know this. We're going to find out that the woman who originally picked up the phone, who transferred her to that nurse, that head nurse, we're going to find out that she's a minority. We're going to find out that she's either black.
It doesn't matter whether she's a minority or not. We're going to find out that the broad had issues because nobody killed themselves.
Mary?
Out of the blue over some stupid prank. That, well, actually over some pretty hilarious prank. I'm sorry. I'm not going to call it stupid, but it was pretty friggin' funny.
Mary?
But
trust
she
me.
Had issues.
Trust me when I tell you this.
Are you going to turn this into racism?
I am. I know I can.
Oh, God.
I know
you
I can.
You have a racist spin for everything. We all have. I could be racist in everything I do in my life.
I know.
But I don't.
Mary, listen to me. Trust me.
Listen, Reese, I can assure you. She sounds of African descent. First off,
she does sound
what?
African.
Yep.
Yeah, she does. She doesn't have that.
She doesn't have an African name. Her last name is like Italian or Spanish or something.
Okay, go on.
Listen, she doesn't have that crisp British accent.
Uh huh.
And I'm sure that when they spoke to her with regards to not following proper protocol, because I can assure you they had one. They told her because they're still run by monarchs up there, was it 50-50 or 50-50 deal, that she was a threat to national security.
Uh-huh.
Jacinta Saldana.
And she killed herself.
Can I just give you my scenario, folks? And I promise you, once you hear it, you'll agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If this woman is a minority, right? And Poverty Supreme has talked about, remember, he lives in that country. He talks about the racism that happens rampant in his country. Now listen to me, this is what I'm telling you. There was a lot of talk in the beginning about the security protocol at the hospital and whether or not that hospital was or did receive some scrutiny for letting the phone call go through. Do you think it's quite possible that they took this black woman, this minority, whatever she was, and raked her over the coals? Bitch, what are you doing passing that phone over to Kate? Oh, she's Indian. Is that her?
Yeah.
Okay. Bitch,
you
what do you think
right
you're
inside?
Doing? Yeah. No. Bitch, what do you think you're doing? You answer the phone and you just transfer it over. You don't ask somebody who she is or who it is or what they're doing. Bitch, you crazy? This is the future queen. I ought to slap you, bitch. How dare
Have
you?
Have you lost your mind?
How dare you? Yeah, exactly.
How dare you, bitch?
Oh, she'd slap you in your mouth, you bitch.
You're no longer worshipping rats and worshipping cows, you filthy sot.
You come into our country, and now you don't even know that this isn't the queen. Who the hell do you think you are, bitch? Or to slap you. You should go home and kill yourself. I'm sorry, folks. But
we do it for you.
And she went home, okay? And she pulled the House of Sand and Fog on her. Now, folks, if you don't know that reference, go watch the damn movie. House of Sand and Fog. Ben Kingsley, Jennifer Connelly. She pulled the House of Sand and Fog. and she killed herself because she felt that this would have never ever gone as far as it did had she not transferred that call. That's what happened. And they ripped her apart for her transferring the call, and this is an Indian woman, and I'm sorry, those folks, they, you know, they got a lot of pride. She went home, she probably felt awful. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Mike, am I going off the deep end here?
Dude, no, I mean, I don't think it's racism, but I think she did what every good British citizen should do when she commits such an affront to the House of Windsor and kill herself.
That wasn't
a very good thing for a British citizen to do. She brought shame upon the House of Windsor. I hope she disemboweled herself like a Japanese general in World War II.
I don't understand how a woman like this, I mean, she wasn't the center of the controversy in no way. She wasn't even at the center of it. Now, the broad who is at the center of it, nothing goes wrong with this broad. No one's even heard from her. Now this woman takes her life and she's the center.
She probably got a tongue lashing too, but you know what? They like to play semantics in that country. They like to take her back to the root of the problem.
What's the root of the problem?
The fact that she didn't put the call through.
Right.
I mean, do you really think in any world that the Queen picks up the phone and makes phone calls for herself and handles that kind of nonsense?
Of course not.
Of course not. Look, man, my name, you know my name, right? Well, there happens to be a celebrity with same name, okay? Well, I was calling to order bicycle parts one time, right? So I make phone call, I tell the guy my name, and this idiot says, "Oh, are you the famous actor?" And I said, "Yeah, dude, because that guy doesn't have an assistant who would do this crap for him. Are you kidding me?"
And what did he realize that he had obviously made a mistake?
He just said, "Oh, yeah, I guess you're right." Like, good God, man, that guy's a multimillionaire. He's not ordering parts for a performance bicycle himself.
And he doesn't look like a guy who rides a performance bicycle anyway.
No, not at all.
Look, this is, did you see the movie The House of Sandoval?
Long time ago.
Okay,
I don't really remember.
Ben Kingsley and his wife, how they killed themselves at the end of the movie, right?
Okay.
They put a bag over their heads.
Uh-huh.
He put himself in his military gear, and they suffocate themselves.
Now, was this Jennifer Connelly before she developed her eating disorder?
No. Well, she has an eating disorder? Oh, yeah, when she got
like,
really, really
was this
thin,
like,
right?
Was this like Jennifer Connelly career opportunities body or really skinny later Jennifer Connelly?
Just before she got skinny. This is after A Brilliant Mind.
Because it's a damn shame that she lost that hot body. That damn Hollywood.
She was amazing looking.
She was thicker than a $6 cheeseburger.
She's still gorgeous. But yeah, but see, at the end of House in Sand and Fog, Ben Kingsley and his wife, after the son gets killed, gets murdered accidentally, you know, they get home, they wrap the bags around the head, they lie themselves in the bed, and they suffocate themselves.
That's a good way to do it.
Now, it hasn't
very
been revealed
mess.
How this woman killed herself, but it would be, for me, it would be pretty ironic if that's how she did it. For me, it would signify exactly what it is that I'm saying. Bitch, you let that phone call through. You to go home and kill yourself.
Well, I don't think it was racist. I think they would have chewed anybody's ass who did that.
Yeah, but, I mean, the only person who deserved ridicule here is the broad who gives all the information on the phone about her.
Well,
being.
Hey, you know, she assumed it was the queen, you know?
Yeah.
Again, exactly. Which was kind of silly, but, you know. Perhaps, you know, Priya Rajesh Najish or whatever should have, you know, pulled her head out of her ass and taken a little more care.
Sally D.
I suppose it must be the gringling.
Sally D., what's up?
You know, I mean, come on, guys. This lady, whatever she's doing, I mean, it has nothing to do with this call. I mean, Jay-Z, listen to me. Jay-Z, they're going to crack it a little early tonight. JC, what's going on, man? You really think this is all about her, like, losing her job and getting called out? I mean, she probably had problems before this thing played out.
That's what I believe. I believe that she probably had some financial trouble, you know.
It should take a lot more than that to make you, you know, eat the bullet. God damn. I mean, if that was it, she was walking a very thin line, my friend.
You know, but here's the part that I actually find very, very sad. What's really going to hurt all of this is that now you know what's going to happen to morning radio, this shock jock, not even shock jock, because the shock jock thing is dead. There are no more shock jocks in the business anymore. They're all gone. They've been dismantled and destroyed. But what's going to happen to morning radio now is that things like these, prank calls, oh, forget about it. It's done. That's, you know, talk radio is going to go back to doing what it used to. It's going to go back to its early Z Morning Zoo days when it was really pathetic.
Oh, where it's like one guy has a regular name, but one guy's named after an animal. It's like Bob and the Weasel.
Yeah. That's right, folks. Check out the Z Morning Zoo with Bobby Z and the Giraffe.
We should do that way too well. So but you just touched on something that I got. I mean, that's been on my mind. I'm actually wondering, is there a legal case here? I don't know about England's legal system, but if that happened here, you damn well know there'd be litigation shortly after.
England's worse than here, man. That's the most contentious country around.
Is going to sue that radio station.
Oh, of course, wrongful
under
death.
No circumstance.
Wrongful death,
without a doubt.
Right, and so, which is exactly what Reese just said. We're going to become a society. I mean, it's bad enough we can't talk to each other honestly anymore. I mean, that's already happened. But we're going to become a society where you can't even do, you know, you can't even lampoon. You can't even do satire. That's where we're heading.
Yeah. Exactly. No more satire.
There was a comedian in Canada.
No matter where you are, you have to watch how you conduct yourself because anybody's eligible for a lawsuit.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, there was a stand-up comedian in Canada just recently who got a judgment against him because he called some lesbian heckler a lesbian.
That's right. Hey, you know what? This was interesting. You want to talk about something that's crazy? There was actually a court case that just ended in England, if not yesterday or the day before, where this guy was dragged into court for calling his friends nigger out a window.
Good God.
I swear to you, look this up. It was an N-word lawsuit against the city. Apparently, he was talking to his friend. He was all right. I'm all niggers. How's doing? I'm going to come downstairs right now. We're going to get a couple of 40 ounces. How's doing, my niggas? And he got arrested and charged for using the word nigger in public. He pled not guilty. He had to go to trial, and they found him not guilty because the jury ruled, or the parliament ruled, that he was using the word nigger as a term of endearment. Because his argument in the case was, what are you talking about? I listen to rap music all the time. That's all they say is nigger in their song. And that's the way I talk to my mates. Hey, nigger. What's up, my nigger?
When I was in the Air Force, I got chewed out for referring to a guy as the black guy. Like, this black sergeant called me and he said, why'd you say that? Why'd you call him the black guy? I said, well, because he was the only friggin' black guy over there. Like, couldn't you have called him the guy in the red shirt? Like, no, dude, he was black. Jesus Christ.
Did you say, hey, excuse me, not you, the black guy.
They said, which one? I said, oh, the black guy over there. I'm like, oh, that's racist. I'm like, I didn't call him the nigger over there. I called him the black guy over there. Jesus Christ, a perfectly acceptable term.
the black guy, cuff him, put the cuffs on him.
Damn, it's like if he'd been the short guy, would I have been busted there too? Oh, no, he's the guy in the red shirt. Don't call him short. God damn. It's a perfectly acceptable term of description.
Did you just refer to him as a black person? Yes, I did. Cuff him. Put the cuffs on him right now.
Here's your Article 15 reprimand, Airman. Go whack some ambulances. God damn.
Hey, you guys hear about the story about the magician? This is kind of, it's a bit off the subject, but it's really not. So there's a magician that goes overseas to the Dominican Republic. Have you heard this story?
Oh.
Just happened.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one, yeah.
And he goes to do his act in the show, and the host lights his head on fire because he thinks the guy's possessed. I cannot. So,
yeah, that's crazy.
So I think it does go to speak to, it's really hard to assess these days how anybody's going to perceive a damn thing anymore that isn't just, you know, right in line with the politically correct. We're out of control.
Because everything is up for scrutiny. That's how bad it is. That's how bad Absolutely. It's become. That's how bad it's going to be for years to come. It only gets worse, folks. It only gets worse, I promise you.
I got reprimanded at my new job, like 3 days in, right, for being inappropriate. Now, far be it from me to be inappropriate, okay?
No.
Not in my nature. But we were talking about something, and the local theme park down here, the Busch Gardens, has this thing they call Howl Scream. Like at Halloween, they put together all these stupid haunted houses and stuff. Howl Scream.
Yeah.
So I was relating my Howl Scream experience, and the point of it is that one of the haunted houses was a zombie demon sorority house.
Yeah, the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, there were like sorority girls in cheerleader outfits looking kind of goth. And at the very last room, there's this guy chained to a wall, and he has this smoking hot dominatrix beating him with a whip. And this dude's screaming and yelling, and the dominatrix points at me and says, "You're next." So what I say in the story, as I said, not only is that not scary, but I've paid for that before. And I got called into the goddamn office.
Are you serious?
He said, that's inappropriate behavior. That can be construed as sexual harassment.
Were you on the clock?
Really?
Are you kidding me?
So wait,
yeah, these are the
company,
these are
what
the same
do you do,
women.
Like, are you doing like research? Did they pay for you to go to Howl Scream?
No, he was just telling the story. He was in the conversation in the office.
These women talked to me about their boyfriend's penises.
What?
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
I've had a guy at my job whip out his cell phone and show himself to me in a video in a very unfriendly manner. Okay. I was like, whoa.
Really?
The first time he had ever met me, I was like, are you for real? Is this really happening?
Oh my goodness.
And I got called into the office again this week for showing up with a hippie.
Pleasuring themselves in a video.
Hold on. What'd you say, Mike? I heard you.
I got called into the office again this week for showing up with a hickey.
Mike, did you start this job? You're on strike number two, my man. You better get your shit straight, buddy.
Hey, look, here's the thing. As I told the woman who was chewing my ass,
personal training for you.
I said, look, when a hot 22-year-old is biting on your neck, you don't exactly think about the repercussions. I'm 42 and single. Straight
Mike,
up.
What do you do,
I don't
man?
Give a
what
shit.
Do you do?
Listen, when I was managing the Yellow Cab Company in Bloomfield, Connecticut, I used to get complaints from the women in the office because we had this old man who used to, he would just let them rip in the office. He used to just let them rip. He'd walk by and just rip one. So I called him into my office because, you know, I had the complaints. I went to the HR department and said they wanted me to handle it. So they said, well, you know, have a chat with him. Let him know that, you know, try to be cool and know that it's not cool. Well, the guy has a medical condition. So he's sitting in my office and we're talking about it. And I think what the problem is with him is that not only would he let it rip, but he'd lift his leg at the same time as though it's intentional. And I think that's the problem. Because while I was talking to him, he was ripping him.
I gotta tell you, JC, I had the exact same experience with this guy we worked with, right? And what we did was, when he wasn't there, we went in his office and we put an air wick in his office, okay? And when he came in and found the air wick, he went to HR. And they were on the hunt for weeks to figure out
who the hell did that.
Who did it?
Look, man.
What did they
I live... I live on fiber, beans, and whey protein, okay? This is not a subject with which I'm not familiar, okay? But, you know, sometimes the body's going to do what the body's going to do.
Right.
Let me tell you, listen. We had gone so far as to anonymously send this man a letter at home from the caring committee asking him to stop. He bought the letter in the work, and like with you, Sal, there was such a witch hunt on to figure out who in the hell sent that letter. I mean, they pulled us in each one at a time, and basically told us, although we denied it, told us what it was that we had to say in the letter because it sounded like us as the way it was written, it was the way that we speak, but it sounded like a bunch of us at the same time speaking. And they were dead on the money as to who contributed to the letter and what they had to say. Because the person that sent the letter sent it word for word as we spoke it.
Nice.
I love the fact that people are actually going through covert actions to get people from passing gas.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
My name is Ed.
We've got to talk about this. We talked about it earlier in the week. It was a big topic of our discussion. George Zimmerman is suing NBC Universal. And there have been some speculation that it's a frivolous lawsuit. But I'm going to prove to you that there is absolute proof that George Zimmerman can win his claim when we get back on Reese on the Radio. And you'll never guess, folks, who's the culprit here. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, I was absolutely shocked at the revelation that Jesse Jackson Jr. is accused of spending campaign finances like a recent lotto winner. But what really shocked me was in the midst of this scandal, the people of Chicago reelected him, only for him to resign a week later, costing the state a fortune in special election costs. Jackson will soon be joining the prestigious list of Chicago luminaries like Dan Rostenkowski and Rod Blagojevich. And since no one is responsible for their own actions, not even voters, I would like to propose that Chicago open up a felonious politician museum. This way they can pick up some lost revenue that's been pilfered from the people. And make sure to leave room for expansion for more Chicago heroes like Axelrod, Emanuel, and Obama. I'm Chuck Woolery. And I think I just said that with my outside voice. Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
On radio, and we're back. It's 44 minutes after the hour. In about 15, maybe 20 minutes, we're going to have a guest on the show tonight who's going to say, I'm going to see whether or not these guys who talk about web promotion, you know, promoting yourself on the web, all that other good stuff, I'm going to find out whether or not this guy is worth his salt. JC, what's the name of this guy we've got on the show today? And I hope JC is there.
Yeah, I just had to unmute myself. His name is Stephen Olscher.
Stephen Olscher, and apparently this guy can show you how to monetize your online activity or your
maximize.
You maximize or well monetize is pretty much what it is that he's a part of. His name is Steve Olscher. Let me see what the name of his group is. He's America's, it's America's Reinvention Expert and author of Amazon's number one rated book, Web Marketing, Internet Profits, The World's Leading Experts Reveal How to Profit Online. So he's going to get on there, and I'm going to put him to the test. We're going to talk a little bit about him, what it is that he does, and then see if he can actually expand the Reese on the Radio brand better than what it is that we're trying to do already.
And if it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. I'm kind of glad that he's on tonight because back right before the big crash,
internet boom,
the crash of internet marketing.
Oh, okay.
Of marketing and profits, because when back in say roughly around I started about maybe 96, 97.
Okay.
When I started with my pro wrestling websites, back then up until about maybe 2002, 2003, when the bottom really fell out of internet ad sales and everything, I was banking roughly anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 a month just writing a daily column on pro wrestling. I used to average 33,000 unique hits a day on my wrestling website. Because people would, you know, they come to find out what it is that was going on in the world of pro wrestling. But I would write an opinion piece or what happened and give my opinion on what happened on the Monday night and Thursday and Friday night shows.
Hmm.
But back then, you were getting one cent per click or 1 cent per view.
Right.
Well, anyway, you're lucky if you can get a tenth of a percent.
We'll get into that with him when he comes on. But let's talk about George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman
that bum.
Is suing NBC Universal for the edit in the 911 call that, of course, caused them to have to fire three of their employees. Now, folks, I don't know about you, but I always thought it was only two. Now we find out that it was three employees that were fired. Three producers that were fired. Now, I want to play you something here because they're not exactly saying how much money George Zimmerman is asking for it. I'm sure he's asking for that money for the obvious reasons. His defense is probably one of them. That's probably a huge part of what it is he's doing and why he's doing. But here's what I believe that George Zimmerman has a strong case for. And that is NBC's depiction of George Zimmerman in 911 calls. This is primarily what the lawsuit is about.
Out of the latest on the Trayvon Martin case, and tonight NBC News has new information that may help shed some light on the man who shot Martin. Here's National Investigative Correspondent Michael Isikoff.
After canvassing the gated community where Trayvon Martin was shot, FBI agents are moving rapidly to complete their investigation into possible civil rights violations in the death of the black teenager. But George Zimmerman's new lawyer says his client is not a racist.
Absolutely not. This is a guy who comes from a multiracial family, multiracial neighborhood, mentored young African-American children. He's got friends that are African-American.
Law enforcement sources tell NBC News the FBI is carefully reviewing Zimmerman's neighborhood watch calls to the Sanford police, all made on a non-emergency line and not 911, as widely reported.
There's two suspicious characters at the gate of my neighborhood. I've never seen them before.
An NBC News review shows that since August, Zimmerman called police seven times, five times reporting his suspicions about young men in the area. But he never mentioned the men's race without first being asked.
And is he white, black, or Hispanic?
Black.
And this exchange.
And Mr. Zimmerman, can you describe the two individuals?
Two African-American males.
The police audio tapes may help Zimmerman's defense that he was not targeting or racially profiling African-Americans.
If Zimmerman is only identifying the race of subjects in response to a question, that is very helpful to him because it doesn't establish evidence of a racial motivation on his part.
The fact that Zimmerman was armed and pursued Martin did violate Sanford Police Neighborhood Watch directives. Last September, Zimmerman invited police to the complex and presided where an officer in charge of the program offered a PowerPoint presentation. The officer emphasized that Neighborhood Watch volunteers were not to pursue suspects or carry weapons, instructions that Zimmerman disregarded the night of his confrontation with Trayvon Martin. Michael Isikoff, NBC News, Sanford, Florida.
Now, folks, remember, it's that report that facts it out, puts NBC in the crosshairs. They said, they even suggest earlier reported about George Zimmerman, as early reported. Well, who are the people who earlier reported these things about George Zimmerman? It was NBC News. Now, NBC News says they will vigorously defend themselves, right? Because we didn't try to depict him as a racist. We didn't. That's what NBC News says. But guess why they have one big problem over there at NBC News? And that's this guy.
He went to the store for his brother. He came back and lost his life. Trayvon could have been any one of our sons. Trayvon could have been any one of us. Trayvon represents a reckless disregard for our lives that we've seen too long. And we come to tell you tonight, enough is enough. We are tired of going to jail for nothing and others going home for something. Zimmerman should have been arrested that night. Zimmerman had probable cause that night. You cannot defend yourself against a pack of Skittles and iced tea. Don't talk to us like we stupid. Don't talk to us like we ignorant. We love our children like you love yours. Lock them up.
And there, my friends, is your smoking gun. A representative of NBC, known as Al Sharpton, who has a show on MSNBC, is screaming racial rhetoric in condemning George Zimmerman, using
okay.
words like ours and theirs.
Right.
So George Zimmerman's lawsuit will stand up in trial. And they've got one fool-ass nigga named Al Sharpton to thank.
Any can I beg to differ with you for a moment?
Go for it.
Okay. I don't think at the time that Al Sharpton was making that statement, he had an MSNBC show.
Yes, he did.
I don't think he started that show until well after.
Everybody said during the time of the George Zimmerman case that Al Sharpton should not be out there on the, rallying people out in the streets while he was hosting an MSNBC show and claiming to be unbiased. That's a fact.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Mike, back me up on this. Is that a fact?
Yeah, I think so. I'm Googling it right now. See when he started his show on MSNBC.
Yeah, Politics Nation has been on, what, for at least 6-7 months.
Let's see.
No, sorry, wrong. Longer than that. I apologize. It's been on for the whole year.
He was named the host of Politics Nation in 2011.
There you go.
Was
That's
he?
Right.
Okay.
And
then that
George
is going to be a problem.
It happened in February. I mean, and, yeah, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin happened on February 26th. So everybody called the question why Al Sharpton was out there in a rally and then hosting a 6 p.m. show on MSNBC.
Yeah, well, he started his in August of 11.
What's that?
He started his show on August 29th of 2011.
There you go.
Yeah, then they're going to have a problem. I no longer beg to differ. I withdraw my statement. The jury is to disregard everything I just said.
It's a fact. And with MSNBC running three airings of the doctored 911 call, the fact that they fired three people behind doing it, in essence, they've already made themselves culpable because they're saying we fired three people because what they did, what would be considered the standards of NBC, right, would be against the standards of NBC. They fired those three people. Therefore, NBC has acknowledged that something was done that was wrong at their network, and the network is now responsible. They may look at it by saying, oh, well, we fired those guys. Oh, blah, 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 blah. You may have fired them, but the damage has already been done.
And they didn't fire Al Sharpton.
That's right, exactly. And they didn't fire Al Sharpton.
This is the first of many lawsuits. NBC's first. He's going to go after ABC next, and he'll go after the Miami Herald. Because there's a reporter for the Miami Herald named Frances Robles who has been really knee-deep in this. She's the one that she released the name of that friend of his who was an air marshal. She dug around and found that guy out and put his name out in public and jeopardized that guy's safety. I think Zimmerman's going to sue a lot of media.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's only right for him to sue them. This is defamation at its worst.
Thank you. Yeah, they've ruined the man's life. I mean, that guy's life is over. He's going to have to move to Idaho with Mark Furman.
Well,
you know,
I
did hear something in that clip that you played, too, that I didn't realize till recently as well. I don't think it's going to help them in the murder, too. However, I did hear that and taking a position of neighborhood watchman, he was shown whether the a manual or what was it what's that technical term that they use now the Microsoft show that they use. The little Microsoft show. Damn, you don't make me look it up. PowerPoint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was showing a PowerPoint which told him that he's not supposed to pursue any suspect or anything or carry a weapon.
But he was not official neighborhood watch, and he wasn't on the job at the time.
Bottom line is, man, I can follow anybody I want in my neighborhood while I carry my gun. Period. As long as I don't accost them and threaten to arrest them. And there's no evidence that he did that.
You know what's another part?
At a time?
You know what? Hold on. Here's another thing, and I'm going to play this, because this is an important thing, too, because, Mike, I think you brought it up, and it makes a very valid point. You said that he's going to go after NBC, he'll go after ABC. Of course, got to go after Matt Gutman, because Matt Gutman on March 13th tweeted, George Zimmerman kills young man because he's black. Remember that. This is Matt Gutman tweeting to his audience. But anybody remember this little ditty that happened at CNN?
911 tape of George Zimmerman's call. Now, the 911 tape of George Zimmerman's call. As he was pursuing Trayvon Martin through the gated community he was patrolling, we should warn you right now, you're going to hear some strong language. You might want to send your kids out of the room. The two words you'll hear are an expletive and, some believe, a racial slur. When the question first came up, 360's Gary Tuchman worked with one of our top audio experts to enhance the tape.
Rick, can we play just that second word, what we think the second word is, and hear if that sounds any different? Okay. I mean, it certainly sounds like that word to me, although you just can't be sure. But that sounds even more like the word than using it when it was with the F word before that.
That's correct.
All right, it seemed pretty clear then. But since then, we've been able to use an even higher tech method to isolate what was said that night. Here again, Gary Tuchman.
This is Brian Stone. He's one of our senior audio engineers,
correct,
expert in this field. And you have enhanced the tape, and we're going to listen to this. I have not listened to this tape either. 2 weeks ago when we did this, I didn't listen to it because I wanted to listen to it for the first time on this equipment. The second version that's been enhanced, I haven't listened to. Let's play it.
Are you following him? Yeah, okay, we don't need to do that.
Now, that certainly sounds much clearer than the first tape we listened to, right?
It's extremely clear now.
Some are accusing George Zimmerman of using the racial slur coons in his 911 call. It was preceded by the F word.
Can we play it again? Can you repeat it so we can hear it a few times? The problem is, this is very short. It's only about 1.6 seconds. So
roughly, yeah.
So once again, if we can repeat it a few times so we can hear it clearly.
Okay?
With this new, clearer audio, it's apparent the first word is a curse word. So we'll bleep it out for the rest of the story. It's the second word that's important to hear.
I don't want to say what it sounds like this time, what a lot of people are saying it sounds like, but let's play it a few times so the viewer can have an idea for themselves and
sure,
make their own conclusion. You can stop for a second. Now, it does sound less like that racial slur last time. I acknowledge the possibility it could have been that slur. From listening in this room, and this is state-of-the-art room, it doesn't sound like that slur anymore.
Right.
It sounds like, and we wanted to leave it up to the viewer, but it sounds like we're hearing the swear word at first and the word cold. And the reason some say that would be relevant is because it was unseasonably cold in Florida that night and raining. So that's what some supporters of Zimmerman are saying, that would make sense if he was saying the word cold. But that's
so here it was, CNN, that was doing an investigative report as to find out whether or not he was calling Trayvon Martin a fucking coon. Dude, this doesn't get it. This lawsuit expands. CNN, wait for your letter, my friend. Wait until NBC is done with.
And so they.
What'd you say, Mike?
The commentator warns people that there's going to be some harsh language, right? So they bleep out effing,
right?
But they play what they think is coons 25 times. So how truly offensive is it?
Yeah, exactly! Exactly! And this is a Wolf Blitzer special report. and have got people on pins and needles. Did he say coon? Did he say coon? We need to prove whether or not he called him a coon. This literally, dude, this is nothing more than I want to call it a lynching of George Zimmerman on national television.
Oh, yeah, they railroaded that guy.
And
like I said, man, his life is friggin' ruined.
They did.
It's ruined. His life is over. He's never going to get the stink of this off him.
Cut the check. That's all they have to
do. He's got to go live someplace where there's only white people. And who wants to live in Idaho?
What? Hey!
Yeah, so you're going to move to Utah with the Mormons?
Exactly. That's exactly right. JC, let's get Stephen Olsen on the phone. Mike, I'm sure you're probably
there?
Not going to want to stay for this interview.
Yeah, I'm pretty
I'm
much
here.
Out, man.
Okay, all right, no problem.
You're not going to believe what's going on with me.
All right, we'll take a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Say, Mrs. Dolly Thomas, another sister shooting heroin to Morris, amputees in Freetown, Sierra Leone's. The church wasn't honest. The state put the youth in a harness, creating hostility among us. The teacher said no college. Still kid gotta get a check with a couple commas. People wanna bomb us. More people gotta scatter and run from us. Blame it on Zeus and Apollo and Adonis. But what you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. What you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. Years. She got dark, dark wavy hair with a voice that she just don't care. She got a skirt with another tie. She got a daddy never gave her. She drink a beer with the mountains up. She got knocked up in a pickup truck. But she got engaged when she was 19 to this dude who was acting insane. Got a 45 that he always claimed. She said one day, one too many days. Now we thought that she ran away, never to be heard from, never to be seen. I took the cover of a magazine. I'm just wondering how, what you done is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you put in yourself away. What you done is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be done before you're pulling yourself away. What you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be done before you're pulling yourself away. Yeah, what you done is put yourself between a bullet.
cotton. Great Almighty, gonna take a bale of hay. Great Almighty, gonna take a bale of cotton. Great Almighty, gonna take a bale of hay. Oh Lord, pick a bale of cotton. Oh Lord, pick a bale of hay. Oh Lord, pick a bale of cotton. Oh Lord, pick a bale.
You're the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it. I-L-O-V-E-I-T.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
You want to talk about technical difficulties that are driving me up the wall today, folks? You're listening to them right now. Every button that I press doesn't matter. Just doesn't go off. Won't fire. System won't fire. Now, we're trying to get Steve Ulcher on the phone. He's going to turn out to be a bust. I'm about to be really, really angry at this guy and his publicist, but I'll get into that later. This is just turning out to be one of those damn Fridays. This is just turning out to be one of those goddamn Fridays. And I'm having the worst one ever because everything that I had planned was surrounding around these things. Just had surrounded about everything. So let me just go into a diatribe about something stupid that I heard come up in the news. Folks, you may not have heard this. By the way, it's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com, December the 7th, 2012, a day that will live in infamy. I played some audio a couple of weeks ago. Maybe even a week ago, by a writer named David Sedaris. And David Sedaris was pretty much my list of writers out of the very few that I like, because I ain't really into book reading. He's one of the few writers that I like because he's funny. And some of the stuff that he writes is, it's not so much that it's right up my alley. He talks about things that are absolutely foreign to me. But it's still well received on my level. I suggest you pick up some of his books. Me Talk Pretty One Day, Don't Dress Your Family in Corduroy or Denim, The Santa Land Diaries. These are plenty of books that you can pick up that are written by him. Of course, I'm sure that you can get them on Nook or they're online books. You can pick up any one of them. Well, I read one of these small sort of books. Everything about his books is a series of short stories. My favorite one of all time is You Can't Kill the Rooster. Now, folks, if you've never read it and if you've never heard it, go on YouTube and just type in David Sedaris, that's with an E, S-E-D-A-R-I-S. His sister, Amy Sedaris, is very famous. She was in the movie Elf. She played James Caan's secretary in the movie Elf. She's been in comedy. She had her own TV series, I believe. It was called Candy from Strangers or something like that. Strangers with Candy, I apologize. That's the name of the show. Strangers with Candy was her TV show. And her brother, David Sedaris, is a very acclaimed writer. And I want you to hear something, because we've been talking about what's become sensitive as of late. What's become extremely sensitive to the public as of late. And one of the stories that David Sedaris wrote... And hold on, let me get JC on here real quick and just put him. JC, by the way, stop it with Stephen Ulcer. It's all right. It's not happening. F him. I don't care about it anymore. He's done. I moved on to another subject. You might probably want to get in on this one. But just stick around. Just listen to this. So David Sedaris, he's done. F him. I don't care. I'm on a very, very – this is important to me because I love – this story by David Sedaris. And what I'm hearing that's happening now is that he's getting, well, he's not getting, I shouldn't say that. Let me stop right there. What's getting some flack is a tradition based upon a story he told. Now, in Norway, they have a St. Nicholas. They have a Santa Claus. And the Santa Claus that they have walks around with a group of black men. David Sedaris wrote this story called Six to Eight Black Men in his short story book called The Santa Land Diaries. Now, you have to hear it because it's freaking hilarious. For satire purposes only. It's racial and racist connotation, of course, but it's satire. But this is a part of their tradition. And I think that you should hear it. So I don't know whether or not, David, in the clip that I have here, you may not get the whole gist of it. So allow me to break it down to you. Apparently in Norway, Santa, a long time ago, had these 6 to 8 black men who were his slaves. And they would walk around, you know, during the Christmas season. And if you were good, of course, they'd leave you gifts. But if you were bad, they would beat you with a stick and put you in Santa's sack and take you away. And these six to eight black men would pretty much do, you know, the kidnapping, if you will. So David Sedaris tells this great story. He says he's riding on the train talking to this guy named Oscar. And you've got to hear it yourself, folks. So I promise you, Sal, you're on the line now. I promise you, go online, go to YouTube, and look up David Sedaris, 6 to 8 black men. It's probably in two parts that you can listen to it. I promise you, you will howl. It is so freaking funny. But here's an excerpt of 6 to 8 black men by David Sedaris.
The words silly and unrealistic were redefined when I learned that St. Nicholas travels with what was consistently described as 6 to 8 black men. I asked several Dutch people to narrow it down, but none of them could give me an exact number. It was always 6 to 8, which seems strange considering they've had hundreds of years to get a decent head count. The 6 to 8 black men were characterized as personal slaves until the mid-1950s, when the political climate changed and it was decided that instead of being slaves, they were just good friends. I think history has proven that something usually comes between slavery and friendship. A period of time marked not by cookies and quiet hours beside the fire, but by bloodshed and mutual hostility. They have such violence in the Netherlands. But rather than duking it out amongst one another, Santa and his former slaves decided to take it out on the public. In the early years, if a child was naughty, St. Nicholas and the 6 to 8 black men would beat him with what Oscar described as the small branch of a tree. A switch? Yeah, they'd kick him and beat him with a switch. Then, if the youngster was really bad, they'd put him in a sack and take him back to Spain. Wait a minute, St. Nicholas would kick you? Well, not anymore, Oscar said. Now he just pretends to kick you. He considered this to be progressive, but in a way I think it's almost more perverse than the original punishment. I'm going to hurt you, but not really. How many times have we fallen for that line? The fake slap invariably makes contact, adding the elements of shock and betrayal to what had previously been plain old-fashioned fear. What kind of a Santa spends his time pretending to kick people before stuffing them into a canvas sack? Then, of course, you've got the 6 to 8 former slaves who could potentially go off at any moment. This, I think, is the greatest difference between us and the Dutch. While a certain segment of our population might be perfectly happy with the arrangement, if you told the average white American that 6 to 8 nameless black men would be sneaking into his house in the middle of the night, he would barricade the doors and arm himself with whatever he could get his hands on. 6 to 8, did you say?
Now, I played this a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I'm almost certain I played it right after Thanksgiving because I thought it was hilarious. And it's a great story, and David Sedaris narrates it so well. Having the audience behind him probably makes it even better because not so much that you know where the comedy is, but it adds some texture. But when I played it a couple of weeks ago, I just wanted to share it with the audience. I just wanted to share it with you folks because I didn't know whether or not you'd ever heard of it before. You may not be big followers of David Sedaris. And not that I was trying to broaden, you know, anybody's, you know, scope of reading for that matter, but I think that comedy is always something that's helpful. Well, then I read a story last week that Black Pete, as it's referred by the Dutch, this elf, Santa's 6 to 8 black men, they walk around looking like Oompa Loompas. They're in blackface. And during the Christmas season, they walk around and they are Santa's helpers, if you will. And now Norway is trying to end the tradition and get rid of it. They don't want St. Nicholas and his 6 to 8 black men traveling through their neighborhood. They want the tradition done with. Because, you know, of course, that demon is right. It's Norway, for crying out loud. But they've become so politically correct there that they think that this is now offensive. Now, am I out of my gourd here when I say that this is a little too extreme? This is something that has gone around for hundreds of years. And sure, you can make fun of it. Sure, there's something about it that's a little bit off. But it's their tradition. This is why I don't get upset when I hear about a country singer who's singing at Rockefeller Center for the Christmas tree lighting with an earpiece that's got the Confederate flag on it. Doesn't offend me. Why should it offend most? Why does it offend anybody? Shouldn't we be offended by the Chinese flag? I mean, come on. China's got a one-child rule. They're ruled by a government that will kill a child if it turns out to be a girl. No one ever tells someone if they've got a Chinese flag in their ear. And if you really want to talk about being offensive, let's talk about good old Gangnam Style. Wapnam Gangnam Style. Remember him, folks? Anybody know about good old Psy and Gangnam Style?
Gangnam Style.
I don't know what the frick it's called. It's Gangnam Style, Gangnam Style. I don't know. Does anybody know that this is an anti-American hack who wrote a song about killing Yankees and their mothers and daughters? Did you know that? He's got over 800 million views on YouTube.
How did you come to that conclusion?
What's that?
How did you come to that conclusion?
It's news. Check it out.
How did I come to what conclusion? What conclusion about Psy?
Yeah.
Psy has been taking over America with his surprise smash hit, Gangnam Style. But there's new information on the South Korean pop star that will soon change his popularity among U.S. fans. It turns out Psy has been involved in several anti-American protest performances. According to the website Mediaite.com, he smashed a Model U.S. tank while on stage in 2002 to oppose 37,000 U.S. troops that descended on the Korean Peninsula. A few weeks later, Psy cursed Americans after a South Korean missionary was executed. His song, Dear America, sets the record straight. Kill those fucking Yankees who have been torturing Iraqi captives. Kill those fucking Yankees who ordered them to torture. Kill their daughters, mothers, daughters-in-law, and fathers. Kill them all slowly and painfully, he raps. Psy is slated to perform for the President of the United States for a Christmas in Washington special set to air on TNT on December 21st of this year. As a result, a petition to rescind the invitation has been created and outraged Americans for his anti-American song lyrics. JC?
I'm speechless.
Of course you are. Of course you're speechless. Of course you are. Let's bring in our good friend, Sally D., out in Massachusetts. Sal, you there? Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, I didn't put you on.
All right, I was just unmuted, but I was thinking that that's maybe it's time to resurrect your musical career, man.
My musical career?
You know, you never had one? I thought you were in the music scene for a while.
Okay.
Yes,
what? Yeah.
All right, so, I mean, you know, if this thing can fly and this guy can be a star, why can't you get out there and do your thing? I mean, this is, the funny thing is it's garbage. It's garbage to begin with. And, you know, it's just another moron rapping about anti-American crap. But I kind of wanted to go back to this David Sedaris thing. And the reason I wanted to just touch on it real quick is that I think that people like this, writers like this, they're a different breed. There aren't many of them left. I don't think they appeal to a lot of people. And even as I heard the clip, I'm thinking to myself, how many people out there get this or are okay with this? You know, because we're a society that doesn't appreciate, you know, sensitivity, lines of sensitivity when it comes to humor. You know, you're just not supposed to go there. I mean, you know, the old school guys, Don Rickles, and people like that on the stage used to get away with it. I don't even think a comedian today can get away with some of this stuff. And unfortunately, you got a brilliant writer who's got this act, and he's gay, and, you know, he's not some hater, but I don't think people get it. So I don't think a guy like him plays well with a lot of people, for those that even know who he is.
Yeah, but see, that's my point about all of this and why I'm making the distinction between the two, is that, you know, here's somebody with Psy, Gangnam Style. We knew nothing about his history. The guy comes in, he performs this song, Gangnam Style, it becomes a hit, whatever it is. And now people will make the argument. They will say, oh, it doesn't mean anything. That was 10 years ago. You know, he's now made himself a success in the United States. He's toured over. He's changed his mind. But with David Sedaris, not that David Sedaris is on trial here in any particular way, or in the court of public opinion or otherwise, but this whole thing with the Santa and the 6 to 8 black men, you know, they're saying now that this is politically incorrect, but I think David Sedaris has it right here. It's funny. It shows us that some of the things that we used to do back in the days were not very bright. They weren't very thought out. We learn from stuff like that. If we understand its history, then we understand it better.
But we're in a society where it would be okay if a black man was pointing out black faults. But we're not in a culture where a white man can do it, or vice versa. I mean, actually, it's not true. I mean, you can get a Chris Rock, and he makes fun of white people, and white people laugh. But I think it's very sensitive to the black community when, you know, a white person goes there. But I think the bigger issue for me, it's not about Sedaris. I mean, Sedaris is a perfect example. But we have lost our way because everybody's oversensitized to their situation, whether it's Latino or black or white or Asian. You just can't go there anymore.
Don't you think that more you sound more, Sal, and I think I know where you're coming from here, but what I think that you're missing in your statement is the reason why blacks don't want to hear about these stories is because they've not been able to absolve themselves of shame. And shame is a very, very tough thing for people to deal with. You know, it's something that each of us go through over and over again. You know, my brother told a great story. And Edward, I got you on the line. I'll put you in real quick. But my brother told a great story. I'll never forget it. And it was an embarrassing thing for me. When I did it, I felt like a moron. And I'll tell you exactly what happened, okay? I was at my friend Dion's house. My brother was there. We were hanging out one night, and I don't know what we were celebrating, but we were getting ripped off our asses. I was drunk, okay? I woke up in a haze thinking that I was in my own home. I walked out of the living room, walked into the kitchen, thinking that it was, from my memory, I knew where my bathroom was. I walked in, sort of sleepwalking, walked in, put my hand up against the wall in his kitchen, whipped out, and urinated into his cat's dish. Swear to you. Swear to you. Dion, our friend, his house with his girlfriend, wakes up to me urinating in the cat dish and says, "Yo, Reese, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm going to the bathroom. Close the door."
Sounds
and
like
my
a good
brother, question. My brother doesn't hear the story until 2 days later. He comes outside when I'm outside washing the car, and he is hysterical. And when he first mentions it, he goes, "Yo, man, you peed in his cat bowl, man." And I felt like crap. I felt so ashamed, but I had to get over it. It happened. I had to get over it. And I'm not equating that to what black people feel when they're ostracized in the public, but I think that's a clear example of what shame feels like. When you've done something embarrassing or something embarrassing about your heritage and you hold it so close to you, you hold it so close to your heart that when you're ashamed and you're shamed up by it, that you get sensitive. And your only feeling is to lash out and just call people racist or bigoted or mean or vicious or evil because you can't deal with the shame.
Got to stay away from the house wine.
Edward, did you know this about Psy, by the way?
No, I just found out about it today, or this afternoon on the George Report. But you know
did
what?
You
I don't
it?
Think it's gonna. I don't think it's gonna harm him at all. Half of America would agree with him. These Occupy Wall Street fools, people like Rosie O'Donnell, you know, they agree with his statement. The new Black Panther Party. If anything,
dude,
this is going to be good for him.
Kill the daughters and the mothers?
Doesn't that sound like the new Black Panther Party to you?
Of course it does. But kill the daughters and the mothers? I mean,
nah,
this guy...
I don't agree with that.
This
you
guy
know what I do agree
like
with?
Kim Jong-il.
I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it, but I don't think this is going to harm him in any way.
I agree,
anything,
Edward.
What's
if the average person listens to this guy, you know what I mean? 15, 20, the latest?
If anything, he's going to get an honorary membership into the new Black Panther Party because of it.
Look, you know, I agree with Sal.
You agree with Sal in what way?
We need the resurrection of Bummy Eddie. Bummy Eddie.
I'm thinking about it, guys. Hey, look, I heard that rapper 2 Chainz is 40 years old.
He was in Hartford last night.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know who was supposed to be here at the Patriot Center last night?
Who's that?
Wiz Khalifa, and they canceled. They sold the tickets at Patriot Center in Virginia and canceled yesterday morning. The show was supposed to go on yesterday evening.
Did they say why he canceled?
In her early 20s, bought tickets for her boyfriend and her to go see, and he's a huge fan of Wiz Khalifa, and they canceled that damn concert the morning of.
I'm almost certain Wiz was in Hartford last night.
Whoa. I got a better story for you, folks. You want to talk about poetic justice, okay? Now, Sal, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, but I'm sure Edward and Mary and JC is. They call me Big Neef.
Big Neef, yeah.
Okay, so this rapper, who's a big fat ball of grease.
You know where he's from?
Named Rick Ross.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
With an even bigger, nasty beard.
Yeah, he's
a
big, nasty,
he was in
fat
Hartford last
beard.
Night.
Okay. He is under fire now. And he is being extorted by real gangsters.
Wow.
for pretending to be a gangster. It turns out the real person who is this Big Neep and Larry Hoover, who he says in his rhymes, apparently his followers in the Gangster Disciple and the Black Mafia family, are telling him to pretty much cease and desist, or we going to come at you.
No.
Gats at you.
But Mike told that story a long, long time ago.
Did Mike tell this story?
A long time ago, months ago.
I didn't hear that. Why, really? I was not paying attention to that?
Yeah, Mike told that months ago.
So I think
it was during a conversation where he said that we're talking about where the CIA had got caught selling drugs out in California somewhere.
Right.
It was during that very same story.
So now they're telling him that, you know, he's going to have to knock it off, or they're
right.
going to have to come see him on some real nigga shit.
Guess who he surrounded himself with?
I don't know.
Guess who's possible.
They call me Big Neef.
Big Neef. You know who his posse is? He's got 2 Chainz. He's got a couple other rappers we've never heard. And his biggest star, you ready? Omarion.
That's right. He's got that little light in the ass boy.
Light in the ass, light in the loafers.
I gotta ask you a question because honestly, you guys are way more into the rap and know way more about it than I do. But I really used to like some of the rap that was coming out in the 90s and the 80s. When I listen to the modern stuff, it just sounds like corporate crap to me. Now, is that accurate or am I missing it? I mean, you guys talk a lot about modern rappers.
It's regurgitated music.
Like crap to me.
It's regurgitated music.
You
they're
listen
not
to me.
Songs from the 80s, who then learn how to sample from songs from the 60s and forward.
And the thing that, and you know, I think that the Sal's hitting on a deeper point. A lot of the rap back in the 80s, or like when we first grew up, Reese, I think you can agree that it was like a real urban sort of revolutionary type rap, and. You know, they were absolutely against any type of corporate type of funding or backing. But today, that's what they actually strive for, to get these corporate backers, to get these commercializations. You know, all these, Nike and get liquor, commercialization. I'm not saying the correct word.
Well, that's the easy one, liquor.
Liquor's
the easiest to get.
Right, but what I'm saying is, it's a difference back when.
Hold on, guys. I think you guys will agree with me here, okay? I'm gonna make a distinction here, talking about music, okay? There is only one music art form, only one music art form that has never been an overall dynamic, I want to say, business success today. And what music genre is that, folks? That is jazz. Is that a fact? We've never had... Right? It's never been like a commercial success, right?
Correct.
All right. Don't count. Listen to me. If you say the words Al Jarreau or Kenny G, I'll slap you.
That's not jazz.
I was going to hit you with Kenny G.
Wait. But listen to my point. In 1989, 1990, with the advent of what's now we know is SoundScan, which digitally records music sales.
Right.
In 1989, when a little-known group in California that got no radio play, that
right.
got no commercial success,
uh-huh.
ended up on the number one slot on Billboard's record label, and it was NWA.
Mm-hmm.
And record producers who had been putting out groups like De La Soul, Leaders of the New School, A Tribe Called Quest, Nice and Smooth, Eric B. and Rakim, Those guys who were popular but were not selling units. And here was this little-known group called NWA. Every record producer, every record industry bigwig got their copy of Billboard that week, picked up and said, who the F is NWA niggas with an attitude? And why did they sell more records than Michael Jackson? That was their question.
Yeah.
So they told their lackeys, get out there and find this album. I want to hear it. And they bring the album in. They listen to the awful production. They listen to the horrible rapping by Eric Eazy-E Wright. Me give a F about a bitch, I ain't a sucker. They were listening to this awful rap and they're going, holy crap, this is selling. Listen to what they're talking about. Kids are buying this beat a bitch, slap a bitch, shoot a hoe. They like this. Well, listen up, guys. You need to talk to everybody who's on your label who's a rapper, and you need to say to them, yo, oh, can we get them some more bitches dying? Some more niggas shot? All of this, another case of the PTA, another Zone poster, another me, myself, and I, that's not going to fly anymore. Rap people want to hear about your shooting and the killing in your neighborhood, the crack epidemic.
It don't matter, just don't bite it.
Yeah, just don't bite it. Just
you know
don't.
What, Reese? And here's the thing about it is that, and this would have held true in the metal scene as well. Back in the day when Van Halen was breaking, the reason that they were, you know, I make the analogy, there really is a parallel. The reason people, say you're in heavy metal, when Van Halen broke, people were just discarding the Black Sabbaths and every other band because Van Halen lived what they purported to be. And NWA lived what they purported to be. And I don't think it's a rap thing. I think it's more of a, whoever your fan base is, if they can hook on the music, they, yeah.
No, Sal, I'm going to disagree with you here for one
thing.
Let
me correct
you
right there, Sal.
Your point. So hold on, JC, I'll let you get to your point. You know what killed rock and roll music as far as metal was concerned, or even in the metal aspect? I'll tell you what ruined it. And a lot of people won't admit this, but and it's probably going to crush you if you really think about it. But Metallica's Black Album killed rock.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of crap out there that helped kill rock.
Listen to me. I can prove it. I can prove it. Metallica, before that album, before the Black Album, come on, man, and Justice for All, Kill 'Em All, Metallica was always an underground metal group. They were what Sabbath was, what Iron Maiden was, what Pantera was. These guys weren't mainstream. Metallica was the last of that breed when they came out. And then the Black Album came out, and they got critically acclaimed. And the critical acclaim and the quote-unquote boardroom status of that album, rock and roll fell. Because the next, if you really think about it, you know what's the hottest group 2 years later? R.E.M. and Losing My Religion, my friend. R.E.M.
I hear you there, but what I'm saying is that when you had groups like N.W.A. and you had these rappers like Biggie and Tupac and you had this friction, people sensed that was real. And I think that was part of the attraction. I mean, granted, I know I've heard your show where you talk about how good Biggie's first album was. I'm sure it was. I don't know it all that well, but I do plan on checking it out. But the bottom line is, it was about the fact that people bought it. They bought not only the music, but that it was real. And I think that really was why rap today makes me laugh, because the 50 cents, whatever they call it, it's not real. It's corporate. And he can look as badass as he wants, but it's still corporate. It's not the same thing.
Right, but you know what you stated earlier, Sal, that was something that they were living. NWA, even though they're kind of considered the group that started all this gangster rap, they weren't living those lifestyles.
they were rapping about what was going on around them. If you look at NWA and NWA's history,
Eazy-E was a drug dealer. Eazy-E was a drug dealer.
You know, he was a drug dealer, but you know what? He wasn't a rapper either. They had to punch Eazy-E in on the whole album. They would have a rapper rap his line for him, then he would rap it on the microphone, and they'd punch in and out, in and out, in and out, until they had an album.
Right. Yeah, absolutely right.
Because of his voice. See, he wasn't a rapper, so I wouldn't say that, you know, he didn't rap about what he was about, because he didn't write any of it. He was totally made up, like Backstreet Boys.
But who was buying the NWA records? Was it white America or black America?
Oh, no, at that time, see, that's the interesting part. The NWA, that to this day, there will never be another rap group that sold that many copies to just the black audience. Because no white kids were buying NWA. It was all the black kids in L.A. that were, and the Latinos. They were the ones that were buying the NWA album. Those are the ones who were buying it. Now, when the culture started to shift and people saw the marketing possibilities with rap music in the early to mid-90s, then the market share started to change as far as who it was that was buying rap music. And it was the disposable income of, and this statistic stood for a long time, I would say about 15 years, that most of the people who were buying rap albums were girls ages 12 to 18 who were white.
Right,
and that's
right.
The reason why. You look at the marketing of some of the rappers like DMX, Ja Rule, LL Cool J even for that matter. A lot of their quote-unquote marketing was, what did you see? Black man with his shirt off.
You know who I think pioneered that? I'd like to say Big Daddy Kane did.
Yeah, but you know, Big Daddy Kane wasn't a big, he didn't have a huge white following. That's the reason why he didn't succeed so much.
No, but just to finish off what Sal was saying earlier, Sal, you look at like the group NWA, and you look at its beginnings, you're going to find members of NWA in a group called World Class Wrecking Crew, and that was their group prior to them, and they're in sequin jackets with makeup and arched eyebrows.
But Chase, here's the difference, man. We didn't have the internet or social media back then, so you could create a persona, and people didn't understand that you were just that persona initially. It took a long time before, you know, that kind of information got around. It's not like the YouTube generation where, you know, a month later everybody says so and so's a fraud, right? And I think for the most part they sold it. They bought it. You know, the whole thing, I was fascinated with Suge Knight and Tupac and Biggie and all the shit that was going on. But at the end of the day, there was some great music made by both of them. And when Tupac got killed, I was, like, devastated because I really thought, and maybe, I don't even know if you guys liked him, but, I mean, I thought some of his music was phenomenal.
I was never a big fan of his.
Well,
my mama, that's a different story,
more polished than I like. The production, but you know, nowadays when I see rap, what's considered rap, I just think it's all bullshit. It's not. There's no. I mean, I get what you're saying about NWA being like a creation of the record company, but to me,
no. Not that they were a creation of the record company, but like I said, they didn't really live the life. Most of the group didn't live the life that they claimed that they lived on the album. Because like I said, prior to that, they were damn near 2 seconds away from being drag queens.
Yeah, and that's the Rick Ross used to be a corrections officer.
Yeah, he used to be a corrections officer.
Yeah, here's the part that makes me laugh about that is because it's not so much about NWA. Only thing that they did, what they did was they didn't change rap music. They changed the rap industry with what it is that they did. I don't think that people give them a lot of credit for what it is that they did as far as changing an industry. Because
they killed Daddy Kane.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they killed him.
Oh, absolutely. Hold on, I gotta play this.
Witness the strength of street knowledge.
Straight out of Compton, crazy
I just had to play that.
You know what? When you listen to that, that's what I'm getting at, though. There's a raw edge to the production of that track that I think resonates. And you just don't get that. Everything you hear today, whether it's hard rock, there's a polish on it because of this digital age. And there's a sheen on it because this. I just feel the corporations and the music industry in general is so, it's hard to really put a pin on it, but it's...
Well, in order for rap to survive, Sal, in order for rap to survive during the time that it did, when everybody was calling it a fad, you have to remember that. Remember about the elements that went along with rap music. In order for rap music to survive as a record producer, as an artist, what most people were telling them was that the music wouldn't last. In order for it to last, as far as an artist was concerned or a record label was concerned, in order for it to survive, it had to follow trends. And when NWA did the success that it did, which was so enormous, the record label said, we need that. And if you go to any artist, it doesn't matter what genre, with the exception of jazz, that's why I brought up jazz in the beginning. If you bring up any genre of music, they always tell you, how can we get the next this? We need to get the next Shania Twain. We need to get the next Taylor Swift. We need to get the next John Mayer. We need to get the next Dave Matthews. We need to get the next Eazy-E. We need to get the next NWA. We need to get the next... That's the way the music business has always survived. Rap music
right.
was definitely in that fold.
All right, so help me understand one thing, then. I get what you're saying. I think that's always been true. But am I wrong when I say that the product today, and I'm going across genres, but rap as well, doesn't it almost seem faux, more faux than ever?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
why?
It's worse than it's ever been because, as you stated earlier, is that it's not so much about realism anymore because it doesn't really depict what has always been my biggest problem with hip-hop today, and this is the reason why I always play songs from, you know, groups like De La Soul and very, very few underground artists. But the reason why I play that is because I play their music as opposed to what's new is because they haven't really tapped, or they no longer tap, the nuance of American life. One of the groups that I love, Sal, and I invite you to check them out, is the group The Far Side. We play them at the end of our show every night.
My buddy's from Philly, and he loves those guys.
Say again?
My buddy's from Philly, and he turned me on to those. He loves those guys.
Yeah, and this was the group that when I was a kid, when I was really into my sort of rap roots, when I was rapping and I was putting out demos and stuff like that, what I loved about them was when they were talking about their lives, they were talking about not getting the girl. They were talking about losing a fight. They were talking about being ashamed or not feeling great about themselves. There's a great song by The Far Side called On the Down Low, where the guy's talking about how he wants to get with this girl, and at the end of the night, he ends up masturbating. You know, and it's sort of like, you know, I listened to it, and I'm just going, you know, not a lot of guys in the hip hop community are willing to be that humble.
Yeah.
You know,
identifiable.
So, you know, I wrote a song when I was with my group, The Beat Market. We had this song called Why You Wanna Do Me Like That. And the guys wrote their own verse, but I had the last verse of the song where I literally broke down my divorce. And that's what I always address hip-hop in some sort of way is, in order for you to quote-unquote keep it real, you've got to talk about everything that happened in your life, even the stuff that you screwed up, even in the ways that you screwed up. I had a great joke. I'll tell you this joke, and I know it's going to be horrible for me to say it, but I have to. When I used to do comedy at the Boston Comedy Club in New York, I had this one joke. I used to open up my set by saying this. Hey, guys, how you doing tonight? My name is Reese. Said, you know, I have a little bit of bad news. I just recently got divorced. And everybody in the crowd would always go, oh, that's too bad. And I said, The reason why my wife and I got divorced is because of sex. We had a sex problem. And you set it up right there, and I would say my wife loved to give blowjobs. It wasn't always to me. But so, that's the way rap should be.
Right.
If you can't do that, get the F out the game. And now everybody is the best and the brightest and the smartest and the most and the big williest, and that's what's destroyed the music today.
It's spot on, man. Spot on.
And you know, I wasn't really complaining about the music today and the lyrics. I listened for the first time in my life the other day. I came across a Jelly Roll Morton track. And I'm disgusted.
What more can I say? Guys, have a great weekend. Nelly D, Edward in Connecticut. White Lie! And Dennis, if you're out there, we love you, man, and we miss you, man. We hope you come back. Justin, we haven't heard from you in a while. You know, get back on the damn show. Hurry up.
Yeah,
and
probably.
I'll talk to you guys
probably.
What's that?
I wanted to shout out Papa H. Supreme.
Yeah, man, and look, I'd like to thank Jake the Snake Roberts and, of course, Diamond Dallas Page for being on the show this week. And I got my wife for 3 days. Somebody home. Somebody's gonna say it. We'll see you guys next week.
Folks, have a good one.
Same bad time, same bad time. Good night, everybody.